chapter 6.
All right, are we all settled in now?
I don't know, I've got a story.
All right, that's nice, but your sister's going to have to go to sleep too, okay? So, I want you to cuddle up next to her here. Nice, all right, lovely. And settle down, and we'll continue to read our story. Would that be good?
Yes, where were we, Dad? I think she made herself very small again.
Yes, she's very small. All right, the next chapter is called Pig and Pepper.
What?
Pig and Pepper.
What on earth is that about?
Well, we'll find out, shall we?
Yes, I'm silly.
Yes, I know you're very silly. All right, shall I read?
Yes, please.
All right. For a moment or two, she stood looking at the house and wondering what to do next, when suddenly a footman in livery came running out of the wood. She considered him to be a footman because he was in livery. Otherwise, judging by his face only, she would have called him a fish, and rapped loudly at the door with his knuckles. It was opened by another footman in livery with a round face and large eyes like a frog, and both footmen, Alice noticed, had powdered hair that curled all over their heads. She felt very curious to know what it was all about, and crept a little way out of the wood to listen. The fish footman began by producing from under his arm a great letter, nearly as large as himself, and this he handed over to the other, saying in a solemn voice, "For the Duchess, an invitation from the Queen to play croquet."
What?
Croquet.
What's croquet?
It's a game that muggles play. It involves small balls and hitting them about with mallets. And you have to hit them through these tiny things like arches made of wire called wickets.
Dad?
Yes.
That sounds very silly.
Yes, well, it's a muggle game. All right, shall we continue?
Yes, please.
All right. Let's see. The frog footman repeated in the same solemn tone, only changing the order of the words a little, "From the Queen, an invitation for the Duchess to play croquet." And they both bowed and their curls got entangled together.
That's funny.
Yes, well, Alice laughed so much at this that she had to run back into the wood for fear of their hearing her. And when she next peeped out, the fish footman was gone, and the other was sitting on the ground near the door, staring stupidly up into the sky. Alice went timidly up to the door and knocked. "There's no use in knocking," said the footman, "and that for two reasons. First, because I'm on the same side of the door as you are. Secondly, because they're making such a noise inside, no one could possibly hear you. And certainly there was a most extraordinary noise going on within. A constant howling and sneezing, and every now and then a great crash, as if a dish or kettle had been broken to pieces." "Please, then," said Alice, "how am I to get in?" "There might be some sense in your knocking," the footman went on without attending to her, "if we had the door between us. For instance, if you were inside, you might knock, and I could let you out, you know." He was looking up into the sky all the time he was speaking, and this Alice thought decidedly uncivil. "But perhaps he can't help it," she said to herself. "His eyes are so very nearly at the top of his head. But at any rate, he might answer questions. How am I to get in?" she repeated aloud. "I shall sit here," the footman remarked, "till tomorrow." At this moment the door of the house opened, and a large plate came skimming out, straight at the footman's head. It just grazed his nose and broke to pieces against one of the trees behind him.
Oh my!
Yes.
Dad, someone's throwing things.
Yes, they are. Would you like to find out who it is?
Yes.
All right. "Or the next day, maybe," the footman continued in the same tone, exactly as if nothing had happened. "How am I to get in?" asked Alice again in a louder tone. "Are you to get in at all?" said the footman. "That's the first question, you know." It was, no doubt, only Alice did not like to be told so. "It's really dreadful," she muttered to herself, "the way all the creatures argue. It's enough to drive one crazy." The footman seemed to think this a good opportunity for repeating his remark with variations. "I shall sit here," he said, "on and off, for days and days." "But what am I to do?" said Alice. "Anything you like," said the footman, and began whistling. "Oh, there's no use in talking to him," said Alice desperately. "He's perfectly idiotic." And she opened the door and went in. The door led right into a large kitchen, which was full of smoke from one end to the other. The Duchess was sitting on a three-legged stool in the middle, nursing a baby. The cook was leaning over the fire, stirring a large cauldron, which seemed to be full of soup. "There's certainly too much pepper in that soup," Alice said to herself, as well as she could, for sneezing. There was certainly too much of it in the air. Even the Duchess sneezed occasionally, and as for the baby, it was sneezing and howling alternately without a moment's pause. The only two creatures in the kitchen that did not sneeze were the cook and a large cat, which was lying on the hearth and grinning from ear to ear. "Please, would you tell me," said Alice, a little timidly, for she was not quite sure whether it was good manners for her to speak first, "why your cat grins like that?" "It's a Cheshire cat," said the Duchess, "and that's why." "Pig!"
"Oh! Dad, you frightened me!"
"Well, that's what it says to do in the book. Listen." She said the last word with such sudden violence that Alice quite jumped, just like you.
"Just like me?"
"Yes. But she saw in another moment that it was addressed to the baby and not to her. So she took courage and went on again. "I didn't know that Cheshire cats always grinned. In fact, I didn't know that cats could grin." "They all can," said the Duchess, "and most of them do." "I don't know of any that do," Alice said very politely, feeling quite pleased to have got into a conversation. "You don't know much," said the Duchess, "and that's a fact."
"Dad, she is very rude."
"Yes, indeed, she certainly is." Alice did not at all like the tone of this remark, and thought it would be well to introduce some other subject to conversation. While she was trying to fix on one, the cook took the cauldron of soup off the fire, and at once set to work throwing everything within her reach at the Duchess and the baby.
"Dad, that's dangerous!"
"I know. The fire irons came first, then followed by a shower of saucepans, plates, and dishes. The Duchess took no notice of them, even when they hit her, and the baby was howling so much already that it was quite impossible to say whether the blows hurt it or not." "Oh, please mind what you're doing," cried Alice, jumping up and down in an agony of terror. "Oh, there goes his precious nose!" as an unusually large saucepan flew close by it and very nearly carried it off. "If everybody minded their own business," the Duchess said in a hoarse growl, "the world would go round a deal faster than it does." "Which would not be an advantage," said Alice, who felt very glad to get an opportunity of showing off a little of her knowledge. "Just think what work it would make with the day and night. You see, the earth takes 24 hours to turn round on its axis." "Talking of axes," said the Duchess, "chop off her head."
"Dad!"
"I know, this is getting a little interesting. Alice glanced rather anxiously at the cook to see if she meant to take the hint, but the cook was busily stirring the soup and seemed not to be listening, so she went on again. 24 hours, I think, or is it 12? Oh, don't bother me," said the Duchess. "I never could abide figures." And with that she began nursing her child again, singing a sort of lullaby to it as she did so, and giving it a violent shake at the very end of every line. "Speak roughly to your little boy, and beat him when he sneezes. He only does it to annoy, because he knows it teases."
"Dad?"
"What, darling?"
"Dad, if I sneeze, please don't beat me."
"Of course I'm not going to beat you. It's just a book."
"I just wanted to make sure."
"Yes, right." And the chorus, in which the cook and baby joined, "Wow, wow, wow." Probably they're all crying. While the Duchess sang the second verse of the song, she kept tossing the baby violently up and down, and the poor little thing howled so that Alice could hardly hear the words. "I speak severely to my boy, and beat him when he sneezes, for he can thoroughly enjoy the pepper when he pleases. Wow, wow, wow. Here, you may nurse it a bit if you like," the Duchess said to Alice, flinging the baby at her as she spoke. "I must go and get ready to play croquet with the Queen." And she turned out of the room. The cook threw a frying pan after her as she went, but it just missed her. Alice caught the baby with some difficulty, as it was a queer-shaped little creature, and held out its arms and legs in all directions. Just like a starfish, thought Alice. The poor little thing was snorting like a steam engine when she caught it, and kept doubling itself up and straightening itself out again, so that altogether, for the first minute or so, it was as much as she could do to hold it. As soon as she had made out the proper way of nursing it, which was to twist it up into a sort of knot, and then keep tight hold of its right ear and left foot, so as to prevent its undoing itself, she carried it out into the open air. If I don't take this child away with me, thought Alice, they're sure to kill it in a day or two. Wouldn't it be murder to leave it behind? She said the last words out loud, and the little thing grunted in reply. It had left off sneezing by this time. Don't grunt, said Alice, that's not at all a proper way of expressing yourself. The baby grunted again, and Alice looked very anxiously into its face to see what was the matter with it. There could be no doubt that it had a very turn-up nose, much more like a snout than a real nose. Also, its eyes were getting extremely small for a baby. Altogether, Alice did not like the look of the thing at all. But perhaps it was only sobbing, she thought, and looked into its eyes again to see if there were any tears. No, there were no tears. "If you're going to turn into a pig, my dear," said Alice seriously, "I'll have nothing more to do with you. Mind now!" The poor little thing sobbed again, or grunted, it was impossible to say which, and they went on for some while in silence.
"Dad!"
"What?"
"Dad, is Alice a witch?"
"Why do you ask that?"
"Well, because I think she's turning that baby into a pig, and isn't that transfiguration, Dad? Is that what that is?"
"Well, yes. Turning people into animals is... Well, really, yes, I suppose you could say that. I mean, I don't think people should go around turning babies into pigs, but yes, that is what it is."
"Oh, my, and Alice is small, right?"
"Yes, Alice is a young girl."
"Dad, that is against the law for her to be doing that."
"Yes, I know, but this is just a book, and I really don't think she's magic. I think perhaps where she is magic. It's a magical place that does that to things."
"Oh, I see. All right, then."
"All right, may I continue?"
"Yes, please."
"All right, Alice was just beginning to think to herself, now what am I to do with this creature when I get home, when it grunted again so violently that she looked down into its face in some alarm. This time there could be no mistake about it. It was neither more nor less than a pig, and she felt that it would be quite absurd for her to carry it any further. So she set the little creature down and felt quite relieved to see it trot away quietly into the wood. If it had grown up, she said to herself, it would have made a dreadfully ugly child, but it makes a rather handsome pig, I think."
"That's funny."
"Yes, it is." And she began thinking over other children she knew who might do very well as pigs, and was just saying to herself, if she only knew the right way to change them, when she was a little startled by seeing the Cheshire Cat sitting on a bough of a tree a few yards off. The cat only grinned when it saw Alice. It looked good-natured, she thought. Still, it had very long claws and a great many teeth, so she felt that it ought to be treated with respect. "Cheshire Puss," she began, rather timidly, as she did not at all know whether it would like its name. However, it only grinned a little wider. "Come, it's pleased so far," thought Alice, and she went on. "Would you tell me, please, which way I ought to go from here?" "That depends a good deal on where you want to get to," said the cat. "I don't care where," said Alice. "Then it doesn't matter which way you go," said the cat. "As long as I get somewhere," Alice added as an explanation. "Oh, you're sure to do that," said the cat, "if you only walk long enough." Alice felt that this could not be denied, so she tried another question. "What sort of people live about here?" "In that direction," the cat said, waving its right paw round, "lives a hatter. And in that direction," waving the other paw, "lives a March Hare. Visit either if you like. They're both mad." "But I don't want to go among mad people," Alice remarked. "Oh, you can't help that," said the cat. "We're all mad here. I'm mad. You're mad." "How do you know I'm mad?" said Alice. "You must be," said the cat, "or you wouldn't have come here." Alice didn't think that proved it at all. However, she went on. "And how do you know that you're mad?" "To begin with," said the cat, "a dog's not mad. You grant that." "I suppose so," said Alice. "Well, then," the cat went on, "you see, a dog growls when it's angry and wags its tail when it's pleased. Now I growl when I'm pleased and wag my tail when I'm angry. Therefore, I'm mad." "I call it purring, not growling," said Alice. "Call it what you like," said the Cat. "Do you play croquet with the Queen today?" "I should like it very much," said Alice, "but I haven't been invited yet." "You'll see me there," said the Cat, and vanished. Alice was not much surprised at this, since she was getting so well used to queer things happening. While she was looking at the place where it had been, it suddenly appeared again. "By the by, what became of the baby?" said the Cat. "I'd nearly forgotten to ask." "It turned into a pig," Alice answered very quietly, just as if the Cat had come back in a natural way. "I thought it would," said the Cat, and vanished again. Alice waited a little, half expecting to see it again, but it did not appear, and after a minute or two she walked on in the direction which the March Hare was said to live. "I've seen hatters before," she said to herself. "The March Hare will be much the most interesting, and perhaps, as this is May, it won't be raving mad, at least not so mad as it was in March." And as she said this, she looked up, and there was the Cat again, sitting on the branch of a tree. "Did you say pig or fig?" said the Cat. "I said pig," replied Alice, "and I wish you wouldn't keep appearing and vanishing so suddenly. You make me quite giddy." "All right," said the Cat, and this time it vanished quite slowly, beginning with the end of the tail and ending with the grin, which remained some time after the rest of it had gone. "Well, I've often seen a cat without a grin," thought Alice, "but a grin without a cat? It's the most curious thing I ever saw in all my life." She had not gone much farther before she came in sight of the house of the March Hare. She thought it must be the right house, because the chimneys were shaped like ears, and the roof was thatched with fur. It was so large a house that she did not like to go nearer till she had nibbled some more of the left-hand bit of mushroom and raised herself to about 2 feet high. Even when she walked up towards it rather timidly, saying to herself, "Suppose it should be raving mad after all, I almost wish I had gone to see the Hatter instead." Well, that's the end of that chapter, and I think that it is time for bed.
"Oh, Dad, I don't want to go to bed."
"Shh! I believe the baby's asleep."
"No, Dad, the baby's not asleep, Annie. See, look, she's looking at you."
"I think that you've woken her up."
"No, Dad, because if I waken her up, she would be crying, and she's not crying. She's just smiling her lovely smile. Hello, baby."
"Yes, yes. Well, yes, she's very lovely. But I really do think it's probably time to go to bed."
"Dad!"
"Yes."
"Do you know who we haven't seen in a very long time?"
"Who haven't we seen in a very long time?"
"Grandfather John."
"Teddy?"
"Yes."
"How many times have I told you not to say,
'Where's my new granddaughter?' Aha! I see her right there. Oh, look at that. Oh, she's smiling at me. Oh, one moment, please. I'd like to introduce you to my very special, my most oldest and dearest friend in the whole world. His name is Tony Harrison."
"Hello. Hello. Pleased to meet you. Pleased to meet you."
"Grandfather."
"Yes?"
"Grandfather, I've met Tony several times."
"Well, I wasn't introducing him to you, you ill-mannered lout. I was introducing him to my grandson, to dear little Teddy here. Teddy, this is Tony. Tony, Teddy."
"Hello, Tony."
"Hello, young man. Why, you're a fine, strapping-looking youngster. Isn't he lovely? He's just a lovely young man, isn't he, John? Oh, he's so lovely. Oh, and look at this lovely young thing. Oh, my goodness, isn't she so pretty? What's her name, then?"
"This is my lovely granddaughter, Annie. She's the most beauteous, the most spectacular, the most intelligent, the most lovely, sprightly thing in the whole world. I just think she's a little treasure. Isn't she just lovely?"
"Oh, yes, look at her smiling at me like that. Oh, that charm, that's just an outrage. Oh, that charm, what an outrage. Oh, my goodness. No little child should be allowed to be that charming. And you're her father. Oh, that's lovely, Remus. Oh, I say, you've created two just adorable children here."
"Thank you so much, Tony. It's so nice to have the two of you
dropping by this evening, so what brings you by?
Well, you know, I heard young Teddy just saying he'd love a visit from his old granddad, and here I am. And I thought, since he hadn't had the pleasure of meeting Tony, my dearest and oldest friend in the whole world, that I'd bring old Tony along and let him see my lovely little granddaughter. Oh, my goodness, she's just, you know, Remus, she is the spit of your great, 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 great grandmother Ludmilla, isn't she?
I've only seen pictures of Ludmilla, and she was a grown adult, so I really couldn't say. Is she?
Oh, yes, do you remember her? Well, what do you think, Tony?
You know, I really think that she is the spit of Ludmilla. Yes, you're right, you know. It's incredible how much she looks like her. Oh, my goodness, I just can't believe it. Oh, well, who is this charming young lady?
Hello, I thought I heard you up here, Grandfather. What brings you here to see us today?
Well, hello, lovely lady. Oh, Tony, I'm so glad you get to meet her. This is Elizabeth. This is Annie's mother, and she's just a dear. Elizabeth, this is my oldest and dearest friend. His name's Tony Harrison.
Oh, pleased to meet you, my dear. Oh, my, you're a beauty. Isn't she a beauty? Oh, my goodness, I don't think I've ever seen such a beautiful woman. Remus, how did you catch this woman? You and her together? I don't know. It's an outrage. I don't see how you'd ever got someone this beautiful to be your wife. Oh, my goodness, I just can't believe it. What an outrage. Oh, my goodness.
Well, thank you. That's very nice of you to say, Tony. So, what do you think of Annie?
Do you know, Elizabeth, I was saying that Annie is the spit of her great, 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 great grandmother Ludmilla. Now, you never knew Ludmilla, but I'm telling you, she was a lovely, lovely woman. And I think this little girl is going to grow up to be the spit of her. I must say I do. She's just wonderful.
Grandfather, I have something in my room that I must show you. I've done a project at school, and it's very lovely. Will you and Mr. Tony come and look at it with me, please?
Oh, my goodness, I'd love to see your project. Yes, I'd love to see that, young Teddy. I'd love to come and see that. Well, shall we go see it, John?
Oh, yes, we'll be back in a moment. Okay, Remus, well, you keep that lovely baby happy until we get back, all right? Yes, yes, all right, goodbye. We'll be back in just a moment.
Who on earth is that? Yes, that's Tony. I was wondering when you'd get the pleasure of meeting him. Tony has known my father since they went to Hogwarts together. So, I don't know, approximately 175 years. I don't know, anyway. They've known each other forever. And Tony has a truly interesting story. Well, he certainly looks interesting, that's for sure. And Tony, that's not a wizarding name at all. Tony is named after his father, who was a muggle. And his mother, actually, was a squib. So, it was very, it was actually very exciting for them when they received the letter, apparently. And Tony hadn't really shown much aptitude, I must say. But apparently, Tony and my grandfather met on the train, and of course they both had silly muggle first names, and so that immediately made them become friends, really. And Tony is the sort of person who, well, frankly, he's a little overconfident about his abilities, to put it nicely. What do you mean? Well, he's got a muggle for a father and a squib for a mother, and frankly, he's not very good at, well, anything, really. But you know how amazing Grandfather John is at magic and, well, everything, as he will tell you. And I do believe it, the longer Tony hung around with him, you know, palled around with him, that the more Tony believed that he was good at magic as well, which I suppose was really nice for his self-esteem, but really they were inseparable. And I think at some point he just began to believe that he was
an amazing wizard, and my grandfather never did anything to disabuse him of that fact. It's actually rather cute. You know, grandfather will do some bit of magic secretly and tell Tony how amazing it was that he just did something like that, and of course Tony always believes that he did it, but yeah, they're very comical when they get together. I would almost prefer Tony to grandfather most of the time, because, well, Tony's a little bit more chummy. You know, you can talk to him, and, well, he loves children, and he never was married or had any children of his own, so he was always hanging about the house. Yes, frankly, I can't believe John's never brought him to see us until now, but, you know, perhaps he's been travelling. Tony loves to travel. I'm sure he'll regale him with some travel stories. But, oh, I think I hear them coming down the hall now. Well, this ought to be interesting. Remus! Remus, I have a question for you! Yes, Grandfather. Remus, is it true that you are reading my great-great-great-great-great-great-granddaughter nothing but Muggle bedtime stories? No, it's not true. Teddy, it is not true at all. We're not reading her nothing but Muggle bedtime stories. We've read her Babbity Rabbity and the Cackling Stump. Yes, and? And,
The Tale of Mrs. Tiggywinkle. Oh.
Tiggy what? Tiggywinkle, it's an outrage. What's that? What kind of book is that?
Oh, I'm sorry. That's a Muggle story as well. How about... Oh, no. The Tale of... That's... Oh, my.
Yes, we did read her, and a lovely story about a dog that Teddy wrote.
Yes, and that was the devil dog story. It was a very lovely story. But, Dad, you know that we haven't really read her much out of Beedle the Bard book, and, you know, I know all of those stories, and I think Annie maybe should know them as well.
Well, yes, I mean, she's very small, though, Grandfather. I mean, you know, we are going to read her some of the Beedle the Bard stories, just, you know, we're probably going to wait till she's a little bit older.
Well, I didn't wait till you were a little bit older. I think she ought to hear one right now. What do you think, Tony?
Well, frankly, I told you I think it's an outrage. She hasn't heard enough tales from our dear Beedle the Bard. I think it's definitely an outrage. I think she needs to hear a story right now. What do you think, young Teddy?
I think that she needs to hear The Warlock's Hairy Heart.
What? You know, The Warlock's Hairy Heart, Miss Elizabeth. Have you never heard that one? If you not, it's a very wonderful story.
I am not going to let you read The Warlock's Hairy Heart to my two-month-old daughter.
Why not? Toughen her up a bit. I'm telling you, Remus, you are going to make her a soft little thing. She needs to know about the world. She needs to know that there are stories and that there are people other than, excuse me, darling Elizabeth, other than Muggles in her life. She needs to hear some of our traditional stories. I am telling you, I shall not leave here until she hears The Warlock's Hairy Heart.
Well, is it violent?
Well, I don't know. It's just a wizarding story. It's for children.
You're not going to leave until we read it to her, are you?
No, I'm not, I say. I'll stay here forever.
He will, you know.
No, it's all right. It's all right, Grandfather. I mean, I certainly wouldn't want to antagonize you in any way. Let's read it to her right now, shall we, Teddy? Can you get the book?
I have it right here.
Yes, all right. Thank you so much. Let's see, well, who would like to read it to the baby? Would you like to read it to the baby, Grandfather?
Oh, I believe my days of reading bedtime stories are fast.
I'll read it to the baby. I love a good bedtime story. May I read it? I'd love to. You know, I've no grandchildren of my own. And I would dearly love...
Yes, you can read it. You're welcome to reading it. Here, take the book and let's just... Well, let's get it over with.
Oh, thank you. All right. Oh, look at that young lady. She's so beautiful. All right, here we go. The Warlock's Hairy Heart. There once was a handsome, rich, and talented young warlock who observed that his friends grew foolish when they fell in love, gambling and preening, losing their appetites and their dignity. The young warlock resolved never to fall prey to such weakness and employed dark arts to ensure his immunity.
Dark arts.
Yes, young man, you know. And you should never resort to anything like that. It's an outrage, I tell you, all those wizards running around, trying those sort of dark magics. I tell you, if I could get a hold of them...
Can we continue with the story, please?
Oh, yes, yes, all right. All right, unaware of his secret, the warlock's family laughed to see him so aloof and cold. All will change, they prophesied, when a maid catches his fancy. But the young warlock's fancy remained untouched, though many a maiden was intrigued by his haughty mien, and employed her most subtle arts to please him. None succeeded in touching his heart. The warlock gloried in his indifference and the sagacity that had produced it.
What?
Sagacity.
What's that?
Sagacity? Is, well, intelligence, knowledge, wit.
Yes, we get it.
All right, continue there, Tony.
Yes, thank you. The first freshness of youth waned, and the warlock's peers begin to wed, and then to bring forth children. Their hearts must be husks, he sneered inwardly, as he observed the antics of the young parents around him, shriveled by the demands of these mewling offspring. And once again he congratulated himself upon the wisdom of his early choice. In due course the warlock's aged parents died. Their son did not mourn them. On the contrary, he considered himself blessed by their demise. Now he reigned alone in their castle. Having transferred his greatness treasure to the deepest dungeon, he gave himself over to a life of ease and plenty, his comfort the only aim of his many servants. The warlock was sure that he must be an object of immense envy to all who beheld his splendid and untroubled solitude. Fierce with his anger and chagrin, therefore, when he overheard of two of his lackeys discussing their master one day. The first servant expressed pity for the warlock, who with all his wealth and power was yet beloved by nobody. But his companion jeered, asking why a man with so much gold and a palatial castle to his name had been unable to attract a wife. Their words dealt dreadful blows to the listening warlock's pride. He resolved at once to take a wife, and that she should be a wife superior to all others. She would possess astounding beauty, exciting envy and desire in every man who beheld her. She would spring from magical lineage, so that their offspring would inherit outstanding magical gifts, and she would have wealth at least equal to his own, so that his comfortable existence would be assured, in spite of additions to his household. It might have taken the warlock 50 years to find such a woman, yet it so happened that the very day after he decided to seek her, a maiden answering his every wish arrived in the neighbourhood to visit her kinfolk. She was a witch of prodigious skill and possessed of much gold. Her beauty was such that it tugged at the heart of every man who set eyes on her. Of every man, that is, except one. The warlock's heart felt nothing at all. Nevertheless, she was the prize he sought. So he began to pay her court. All who noticed the warlock's change in manners were amazed and told the maiden that she had succeeded where 100 had failed. The young woman herself was both fascinated and repelled by the warlock's attentions. She sensed the coldness that lay behind the warmth of his flattery, and she had never met any man so strange and remote. Her kinfolk, however, deemed theirs a most suitable match, and eager to promote it, accepted the warlock's invitation to a great feast in the maiden's honour. The table was laden with silver and gold, bearing the finest wines and most sumptuous foods. Minstrels strummed on silk-stringed lutes and sang of a love their master had never felt. The maiden sat upon a throne beside the warlock, who spake low, employing words of tenderness he had stolen from the poets, without any idea of their true meaning. The maiden listened, puzzled, and finally replied, "You speak well, warlock, and I would be delighted by your attentions, if only I thought you had a heart." The warlock smiled and told her that she need not fear on that score. Bidding her follow, he led her from the feast and down to the locked dungeon, where he kept his greatest treasure. Here, in an enchanted crystal casket, was the warlock's beating heart. Ooh, Oh, I'm having a little trouble turning the page here. Say, what happened to this book anyway? It's nearly destroyed. It really is an outrage. It looks terrible. Who did this?
Well, it had a bit of an accident. It's my book.
Young man, what have you done to this book? It looks like you tried to burn it.
Well, it was a small accident with some fire, but I really didn't intend to hurt it. I know that I should be careful with books, but it was a problem, and I tried to fix it, but, well, I didn't do a very good job, and I was terribly sorry when it happened. I'm very sorry, Tony.
Oh, no, young man, you don't have to apologize to me. Now I've managed to get the page turned here. All right, and what do you think, Miss Elizabeth? Is this story too frightening for your little girl?
Well, so far, no. It's a little odd, but, well, please continue. I'd love to hear some more.
Long since disconnected from eyes, ears, and fingers, it had never fallen prey to beauty, or to a musical voice, or to the feel of silken skin. The maid was terrified by the sight of it, for the heart was shrunken and covered in long black hair. "Oh, what have you done?" she lamented. "Put it back where it belongs, I beseech you." Seeing that this was necessary to please, and the warlock drew his wand, unlocked the crystal casket, sliced open his own breast, and replaced the airy art in the empty cavity it had once occupied.
Oh, my goodness, that was interesting.
Oh, yes, you know. Says, now you are healed and will know true love, cried the maiden, and she embraced him. The touch of her soft white arms, the sound of her breath in his ear, the scent of her heavy golden hair, all pierced the newly awakened heart like spears. But it had grown strange during its long exile, blind and savage in the darkness to which it had been condemned, and its appetites had grown powerful and perverse.
Oh, my. Well, should we continue this at another time?
Oh, we've just gotten to the good part. Don't stop him now, dear. Oh, it's going to get even better. This is the best part. Don't you agree, Teddy?
Oh, yes. This is the very most exciting part. Dad, please do let us finish the story. It's so good.
We might as well just let him finish it.
All right, darling. Well, let's continue and see what happens, shall we?
The guests at the feast had noticed the absence of their host and the maiden. At first untroubled, they grew anxious as the hours passed, and finally began to search the castle. They found the dungeon at last, and a most dreadful sight awaited them there. The maiden lay dead on the floor, her breast cut open, and beside her crouched the mad warlock, holding in one bloody hand a great, smooth, shining scarlet art, which he licked and stroked, vowing to exchange it for his own.
Oh, my goodness.
In his other hand, he held his wand, trying to coax from his own chest the shriveled hairy heart. But the hairy heart was stronger than he was, and refused to relinquish its hold upon his senses, or to return to the coffin in which it had been locked for so long. Before the horror-struck eyes of his guests, the warlock cast aside his wand and seized a silver dagger. Vowing never to be mastered by his own heart, he hacked it from his chest. In one moment the warlock knelt triumphantly, with a heart clutched in each hand. Then he fell across the maiden's body and died. The end.
I love that story. Owen, and he cut the heart out of his chest, and he wanted to steal her heart, and he was very evil, wasn't he, Grandfather?
Oh, yes, very evil indeed. But do you know the most evil thing he did?
What?
More evil than cutting out a woman's heart and murdering her?
Oh, yes, darling, far more evil than that. It's the use of dark magic. Now, you know, Teddy, we never, ever do anything like that, don't you?
Oh, yes, Grandfather, and I'll make sure to tell Annie that we never do anything like that either. Well, I mean, you know, if she's a witch.
Why would you say that, my little darling?
Well, you know, because she has a muggle from Mum, and it could be that she won't be a witch.
Oh, no, don't even say that, son. Honestly, she's the spit of Ludmilla. I think she's going to be an amazingly wonderful, famous, and powerful sorceress. I think that's exactly what she's going to be, don't you, Remus?
Grandfather, I love her, whether she's, it doesn't matter to me whether she's magic or not magic, or whether she's beautiful or ugly. I mean, I love her just the same. She's my daughter. I mean, I don't... Tell me here.
Well, what Remus is trying to say, Grandfather, is that we do love Annie no matter what, and of course we would love for her to be magical and possess some abilities, but, you know, we won't know until she's a little bit older. So, in the meantime, we're just going to keep her safe and happy, and we'll definitely read her more stories from this book, because I can tell she loved that one, and it didn't frighten her at all. So, she looks very happy. I think she likes you, Tony.
Oh, little girls and boys love me. You know, I just love children. I mean, I must say, they're my favorite thing. It's just too bad, you know, I never found a woman I could settle down with. And I think part of the reason of it, and you can back me up here, John, is that, you know, my powers are just so great, and, you know, only certain kind of women can handle that sort of thing. And, you know, luckily John found one who was up to the task. You know, Ludmilla, oh, the saint if there ever was one. What a wonderful woman. Oh, my goodness. You know, I just never could find anyone that could really, you know, measure up in any way. And I just, you know, I wasn't willing to settle for less. So, you know, I just like to enjoy other people's grandchildren and just have fun with them and just enjoy them. And I thank you so much for letting me come here this evening and read stories with my old friend. And, oh, it was just wonderful, just wonderful. May I kiss your hand?
Well, yes, of course you may. Thank you. Thank you, Tony.
Well, all right, time to be going. All right, I just wanted to make sure that you're raising this young lady properly. You do hear me. You've heard me, haven't you? So, you know, I mean, I don't mind her hearing some Muggle stories, but, you know, you must throw in some of our culture as well, because, you know, she has to grow up as a well-rounded individual. Isn't that right, Tony?
Oh, yes, you know, I think that if you come from two different backgrounds, I think it's very helpful, you know, to know about what's going on with both of them.
Yes, I totally agree. All right, we'll be off. It was lovely to see you again, Teddy. It was lovely to meet Annie. Lovely to see you, Miss Elizabeth. And lovely to see you, my dear, dear, dear grandson. So off we go, John. Let's go. Off we go. Let's go to,
No. You're John. I'm Tony.
Oh, yes, yes. You're Tony. I'm Tony.
No, you're... Oh, let's just go to the Bahamas.
All right, we're off to the Bahamas. Toodaloo!
Why did you let him read that story to her?
Well, he wasn't going to quit. But I suppose she probably had no idea what he was saying anyway, but that was horrifying. Teddy, I can't believe as young as you are, you're reading stories about people cutting people's hearts out of their chests and things.
It doesn't scare me. The only thing that scares me about it is the horrible dark magic. You know, Dad, Grandpa John is really right. You should never do that. I think it is even worse than murdering someone. It really is.
Well, I don't know. I don't know what's worse, but no, we should never do it. And it finally looks like your sister has gone to sleep, so I think we should all creep out very quietly and let her have a nice rest, shall we?
Yes, Dad, we should.
All right, good night, my darling.
Good night, my darling. Okay, let's go.